So, the parts of a meta-analysis. Each study or analysis is a case in a meta-analysis. Simple studies will have a single analysis giving a simple effect size. More complicated studies may yield several effect sizes. We're going to show you different ways to get several effect sizes out of a study. The idea is a case needs to be a thing. A case shouldn't itself be an aggregate. Okay? A case should be one thing, not an aggregate of things across descriptive features. And we'll talk. The effect size is the dependent variable. It has to be comparable at studies. It represents the magnitude and the direction of the effect of interest. Direction. Effects have direction. Long ago, we said we're not allowed to say, I expect the correlation. You have to say, I expect the positive or negative correlation. You're not allowed to say, I expect the mean difference. You got to tell me which group's going to have the larger mean, which group's going to have the smaller mean. The challenge is that many effect size formulas and many effect size calculators give you a positive value no matter what. And you have to pay attention to putting a sign on the effect size that captures direction. So you decide, for example, that any time that the treatment outperforms the control, you're going to give that a positive effect size. And then you have to check any that reverse that, you have to give them a negative. Sometimes the formulas and the calculators do that for you. Much of the time they don't. Obviously, when you're asking if results are comparable, you want to keep track of the direction. You might have to do that with some extra effort. The whole idea of an effect size, when we were first talking about effect sizes, is that it gives us an estimate of the direction and magnitude of the effect that's independent of sample size. That was the whole idea. So that we could have one comparison that included sample size, the summary statistic and the p-value, and another one that didn't, the effect size. This becomes really important because some effect size estimates correct for things, including sample size. When I was you, we didn't learn 4 or 5 effect sizes. We learned, I think it was 18. Because at the time, this was just a few years after it had been just a huge rage to figure out better effect size estimates that were corrected for reliability, validity, variance, floor and ceiling effects, invariance problems, on and on and on. Everybody was trying to come up with the one magical effect size. Eventually, the meta-analysts look at the rest of us, like the babysitters that they think they are, and said, stop it. Don't. Give us a raw, uncorrected effect size, because we've got 10 years of literature that shows that you do a better job correcting for things in the meta-analysis than in individual effect size calculations. So we're going to focus on raw, bland, boring, uncorrected, and then look at correcting for things and comparing things within the meta-analysis. Other important attributes of the study or analysis producing the effect size are the independent variables. We'll have a whole list of these before we're done. But it is things like, was it a between or a within groups design? Was it an experiment or a non-experiment? What matching variables were used? What other statistical variables were controlled for? All of those things, what was the population, what was the setting, what was the task, all of those define the study and maybe why results across studies don't replicate. See, what we're doing here is we're setting ourselves up to find replication. What we're doing here is setting ourselves up to explore a failure to replicate if we find it. You're always of two minds in a meta-analysis. You'd like to say, well, I got a whole bunch of stuff, and when I get that one effect size, I'm going to tell you something that's worth you knowing. And at the same time, we're worried that when that goes to shit, we're going to need to be able to explain why different studies got different results. Yes?
Can you include a meta meta-analysis in the meta-analysis?
Yes. You end up with a fairly small sample. But I have done meta-analyses where what we did is we went back and we took the meta-analytic results, and those were our cases. We had maybe 16 or 18 of them. And then we were describing features of the meta-analysis, like who conducted it, what the population tended to be, things like that. So you could have a meta-analysis. Typically, you don't, because what you don't want to say, okay, so these two people ran these. I want to get all of this and more and give it updated. Because remember, we're working in real time. And I might run a meta-analysis, and you might have access to 50 or 60 unpublished studies that I didn't find. You're going to run another meta-analysis. You're not going to do a meta-analysis on just those and then aggregate it with mine. You're going to start with my database, ask politely, maybe write me a check, and then augment it. Does that help?
Yeah.
Okay. Because when you say can you, the answer is yes. The math's there. It's what are you going to get out of it? Strengths of meta-analysis. Disciplined and quantitative approach to combining and comparing empirical research findings. This is the promise. This was the whole idea. Now, if you're a qualitative type or a mixed type, this may be less impressive. But to the quantitative people at the time, who were sort of stuck with sorting articles into three piles, the ones who gave us what we expected, the ones who gave us nulls, and the ones who came out sideways, this was a huge improvement. Because, you know, you sort of counted. If you had a bunch of big effects that were in the right direction and a couple effects that were in the wrong direction, that's all you could really say is they were in the wrong direction. They may be little tiny and in the wrong direction as opposed to huge and in the wrong direction. And so the additional quantitative thing became really, really popular. It was a selling point. I'm going to give you a one-number summary of all of this. And I'm going to tell you if that number is reliably different than zero. And then if we need to, we can play other games with that. That was very heartening at the time. Because we were finding that people were reviewing the same literature and coming up with different conclusions. Why? Because they didn't actually review the same literature. It's a non-hierarchical, it's a non-hierarchical approach. It doesn't favor earlier or later studies as a starting place to which we compare other studies. When you run a literature review, typically the literature review either is historical or anti-historical. You say, well, this is what we've been finding recently, but this is what we found in the past. And, you know, primacy, recency, bias effects. It'd be nice to have a technique that doesn't depend on where we start, but at the same time allows us to include that information. Absolutely, one of the things that should go into your meta-analysis database is the year of publication. Better yet, if you can get it, the year the data were collected. Because sometimes there's as much as a 10 or 15 year period. And you might be looking at publications in the 80s, but you're looking at data from the 60s. It's more important to know the data are from the 60s. It may be important to know that the analysis is from the 80s because we get into peaks and troughs in choosing our analyses. And sometimes we get into a habit and those analyses are fucked up for a few years. And then we figure it out. So it's nice to know both when the data came from and when the analyses and the paper came from. Protects against overinterpreting differences across studies. We're people. We like what we like. There's a tendency to say, those are better studies. I know they're better studies because they found the result I intended. Those five studies convince me of what these 80 studies don't. Seriously? But you see that sort of thing. Allow us to evaluate what attributes of a study are related to smaller and larger effect sizes. This is the big deal. When we don't get replication, why? Allows us to better balance concerns about maximum effect size and maximum representativeness. This is one of the reasons that I get pulled in on meta-analyses more than anything else, is at some point we have to decide, what is the next proposal about? Is the next proposal about a research design to maximize the effect of something, or to study the most representative effect of something? It often depends on where you are in the system. If you've developed a new anything, it doesn't matter, a drug, a product, a training cycle, anything. You want to get started, you want to show that it works. Then you start worrying about whether it works all the time, when it should. This goes back to, this issue here goes back to the difference between the precursor model of how internal and external validity are related and the trade-off model. Sometimes we are in a precursor situation where we need to show this thing does work, at least sometimes. In order to design that study, we'd like to know everything about a study that increases the effect size. It also gives us the Mythbusters approach. Remember Mythbusters? They would take a myth and they would try to represent that myth. And if the myth held up, they were good. If the myth didn't hold up, they went fucking nuts. They started jacking it up, adding this or that or the other thing, typically explosives or speed, until they got the effect. Then they would look at it and say, yeah, that can't be what we're talking about. You know, my favorite one as a farm boy was peeing on a fence. They didn't get it. So they jacked up the voltage going through the fence until they got an effect. They were doing the wrong thing. Everybody, any farm kid will tell you that you don't get somebody to pee on the fence early in the day. Why? What color is your pee early in the day? All right? You're more hydrated. It's more dilute. There's not as much salt in it. Salt is the electrolyte that carries the charge. You wait till later in the day when the poor kid's a little more dehydrated. Then you have him pee on the fence. Yeah. Science. And what they did is they got it to the point where they were recording a charge, and then they said, no, that's not what the myth is. That's what you can do here. You look and say, all right, what combinations of things gave us the biggest effect sizes? You look at it and you say, no, that's not the study I want to run. You with me? When we do a regular literature review, we don't pay attention to enough stuff from each article. That's the bottom line. You got the effect. Maybe who did it? What lab it came out of? When? Meta-analysis says that shit won't do. Meta-analysis says you must take apart each study. Any attribute of that study that might influence internal, external, or measurement validity might influence the statistical conclusion validity and the effect size. Meta-analysis forces us to slow down and actually review the article, not just look at its effect size. That is probably the most useful part of a meta-analysis, is you don't do a literature review in an afternoon, because we all know how good that is, having all done it. It allows us to plan smarter, more sensitive, and more useful studies. Because now we know what differences in the way you conduct the study produce what differences in the results. Isn't that what we always wanted? This is the way to go get that. Weaknesses of meta-analysis. Please notice the star. None of these should impress you. Requires a huge amount of effort. Yep. Oh, it sucks. They did a meta-analysis of 100 years of leadership research across the street a few years ago, and I think they coded data for 13 months. When they were done, they had an analysis that nobody had ever seen anything like it before. It pushed all kinds of crap out of the way. Apples and oranges, comparability of studies is often in the eye of the beholder. It's a guy named Wilson. Wilson was a pretty good meta-analyst, but a huge proponent of it. Did decades of workshops. Lots and lots of people came over because he made it available. He made it understandable. Most meta-analyses include blemish studies. So do most literature reviews. So do most labs. Various forms of subjectivity. No shit. Do you really think there's any more subjectivity deciding what articles to put in your meta-analysis than there is subjectivity in the design of a study? We make shit up as we go along all of the time. That's why we get folks that have been doing research for a while, because their made up shit is better than rookies made up shit. But what if you didn't have to work with even the most veteran made up shit? What if you could actually look at an analysis and say, you know what? When you do this, you get a bigger effect size. When you do this, the damn thing flips. What studies to include? What study attributes to code? Coding these attributes? Yes. There's massive subjectivity in quantitative research. I expect you've figured that out by now as we've gone through all the things we've gone through this semester. Often can't obtain study results or can't summarize an effect size. Yes, you can. And if you can't, give me a shot at it. There are some weird formulas and estimates out there. There's layers of this. There's calculations, there's transformations, and there's estimates. You can almost always get to an effect size one way or another. And the analysis of between study differences is fundamentally correlational. You're not studying causal agents between studies. Hell, most of us in this room will go an entire career without running a causally interpretable study. We live in the land of association, informing how we're going to act as if we have causal knowledge. That's the game we play. We know that. And it's a lot more fun to call somebody else out on their use of causal language than to carefully avoid it ourselves. Yes, it's subjective. Yes, it's associative. But you really have two choices. You can take that subjectivity and that associativity and make it worse by using a shabby opportunistic system, or you can plug it into something that is quantitative and transparent. And you can decide, as we get more through meta-analyses and you see what that database looks like, you can decide which you think is more important, the transparency or the quantitative nature. Leads to a lot of arguments among meta-analyses. Why? They're both awesome.